and welcome to BlazePod. It's Tuesday, the 12th of March. My name's Ben, and on the line, as always, is Andrew. How are you, mate?
No bad, mate. How are you?
I'm pretty good, thank you. Right, short and sweet-ish this week. There's been some off-field news in the last week or so, which we're gonna cover. But first of all, we did play a game this weekend, and we didn't lose. That's nice, isn't it?
Unbelievable. I'm telling you, there's another game I didn't see. I think it's the second or third away match this season that I've not seen due to circumstances, if you know what I mean. And this, I were in the pub.
circumstances beyond your control.
Yeah, so we've not lost any of them. Same as the Luton game was the last one that I missed completely, and we won that. So maybe if I just stop watching, things are going to be a changing.
Maybe. Well, I did watch it. It was a 2-2 draw at Bournemouth. We had a glorious 24-hour period there. We were not bottom of the Premier League. That was wonderful, wasn't it? And then
special time. That was a special time.
It was. And then flipping West Ham gave Burnley a point, so they go back above us. So I was so looking forward to a week of like, actually, Burnley are the worst team in Premier League history.
I mean, obviously, Wilder's talked about narratives in his interview. But I did like that narrative of how they were going to spin it. I didn't see that. I talked to my dad, actually, yesterday. He was saying he read something. He said it with Gary Lineker, right? I think he's got that wrong. But someone was saying, poor Burnley, they just can't buy a win. They just didn't mention us. You know what I mean? It's like, the same points, man.
But yeah, a draw at Bournemouth with goals from Gustavo Hamer and Jack Robinson. His first Premier League goal, actually.
I didn't realise that until they said it on the commentary. Yeah.
We went 2-0 up. We were 2-0 up after 74 minutes and ended up drawing the game. I know, we were chatting to Travelling Blade and he was saying, you know, he said he was more gutted about this than, like, the 8-0 or the Arsenal 6-0. Now he was there, he's in the ground.
So yeah,
it's a different
course,
sensation. I'm watching it through a laptop screen. But I was pretty pleased at this point. I would say we were very lucky to draw the game, even with the opposition. What was it? 91st minute. They equalised. And coward me just turned off for the last 5 minutes of injury time because I was like, we're either going to concede again or we're not. There's absolutely no way we're going to have even a shot at the other end. So there's not a great deal of point in me watching the rest of this game. Because, yeah, we were shot at that point. Not great phrasing there, I suppose, after saying talking about not having a shot. But, we were gone. We'd obviously made substitutions that we needed to make because we'd run out of gas in players that were possibly going to keep us in the game. It was just a matter of time until they equalised, really. And yeah, had there been more injury time, they probably would have got a winner as well. But I will say, having a bit of a goal threat, which we did in this game, does mean you get a chance to steal points in games like this. I looked through all our Premier League matches this season. Only three times, we've played 28 games now, only three times have we taken more shots in a game, that being Luton at home and the two games with West Ham. And 9 shots on target is a season high for us as well. So, I mean, I've kind of accepted that we're going to concede at least 2 goals in basically every game. So having that level of threat at the other end is good. It does give you a chance. The problem is, we allowed 31 shots.
Yeah, that's the second most, isn't it, I think, this season.
It's the most.
Is it the most? I don't know where I thought it was the most, but I read that it was, fair enough.
Only Newcastle have had more than the 11 shots on target that Bournemouth had in this game, and they obviously won that game 8-0. So I'm happy with the point. I'm not fooled by this one at all. We basically got a battering from, you know, minute one. Bournemouth are miles better than us. You're not going to win many games with, allowing 31 shots and having 30% possession or whatever. Happy with the point, but it wasn't super pretty to watch at times, like particularly defensively.
Yeah, I mean, it's we're doing a pod probably next week, aren't we, about things that we want to see until the end of the season. And it feels to me at the moment that we are literally just playing the games out because there's a lot of people who are on that pitch who are not going to be here next year. So it's not really, I know Arblaster, obviously. I mean, you could talk about him, about what his performance was like. But Arblaster and even Brooks and people coming in like that, it's nice to have a look at. But you can't really, we can't get any sort of, you know, idea of what's going to happen next season, because a lot of them aren't going to be there. If Hamer and Arblaster combine really well, Hamer might be gone. We don't know. You know what I mean? It's, there's no, they can't form any sort of partnerships and think, oh, they'll be good next season. By all accounts, Burton Diaz and McBurney played really well. Probably both not going to be here next year. So it's really horrible at the moment that I'm not going to be too critical of them for getting outplayed and stuff, because or worried, because we're not going to look anything like that next season.
Yeah, quite quite a mix, lots of changes to the team here. Baldock comes in to right centre-back and gets through 90 minutes, which is very encouraging. Tom Davies starts and he goes off, he only lasts a half, he goes off at half-time. What else? Yeah, Arblaster gets his first Premier League start. McBurney's in from the start. Sorry, McBurney did start against Arsenal, but didn't last very long. Burton Diaz is back. So quite a lot of changes to the team. And as I said, we looked all right going forward. You know, we had a couple of moments before we took the lead. I think it was one of Hamer's better games for a little while. I mean, it sounds kind of obvious because he obviously scored a goal, which always helps. But some of his like forward passing was just a lot better than it has been. I think he had more chances created than anyone else in our team in this game. And he sort of gets a goal and an assist here, I thought, because he plays... McBurney has a good bit of play to sort of dribble away from their man. And then Hamer plays a good ball to Bogle, forces a decent save, and then he smashes in the goal himself, Hamer. Before, I think this was before that, right? Yes, it was. It was still 0-0, wasn't it? They missed the penalty, or was it?
Yeah, when he slips. Yeah.
Just a really dumb bit of play by Tom Davies. Like, there's that one angle where, and I don't think it's helped by the commentator, the co-commentator going, "Oh, he does get the ball." I'm not sure he does get the ball. I think the angle makes it look like he does, but I think it's probably, I can't remember which player it is now. Is it Semenyo who slides?
I think it is.
It might be Clive, actually, I can't remember. Anyway, I think it's probably
one of the good ones.
Yeah, I think it's probably the Bournemouth player that touches the ball and Davies just slides straight through him. And yeah, there's a sort of incriminating lack of complaints from every single United player, including Davies. Just really dumb. I mean, it's just a free kick on the right and they just pass it into the box. And yeah, it's just stupid from him. Really, really unimpressive bit of play. I thought he was all right, like with the ball, but that was just dumb. And fortunately, Solanke does a sort of David Beckham style slip and spoons it over the bar. I mean, that's the other thing with this game. We drew 2-2. They'd missed a penalty and also had a goal ruled out in the second half, which was correctly ruled out, but was sort of a, you know, if there isn't VAR, there's no way that gets disallowed. Fanboy.
Yeah. And Clinton Morrison, I was watching Sky in the pub, and Clinton Morrison was saying, because Mike Dean were in, and saying, is it Mike Dean? I always get mixed up, Mike Dean and Mike Riley. Mike Dean,
yeah,
isn't
I think
it?
Dean's usually in the studio. Yeah.
Mike Dean were saying, oh, yeah, it's clear and ball. And Clinton Morrison goes, what was he supposed to do? And it's true, you know, they blast the ball at him, and obviously it's not deliberate, but, you know, dem's the rules. But Clinton Morrison, you know, whatever people think of him, he was saying all the way through the game, they kept going, what happening? It's all Bournemouth. It's all Bournemouth. Yeah. and then we were really, like, surprised when we obviously got two goals on the break and stuff. But, like I say, just get as many points as possible. We'll come on next week to what we actually want to see for the last 10, because I don't really think we can even learn that much in these final 10 games, because the team's going to be so different next season. There's Arblaster and people like that you can take a look at, but... You know, I looked at that defence when it lined up and I just thought, geez, you know, Robinson has been good for us this season, but, you know, he's the only one in that back three, Baldock playing out of position, that you think, yeah, that's okay. And that's bad. If no offence to Robinson, but you know what I mean? If he's the linchpin of the defence, then, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the performances were like of the back five, but... That's a worrying Premier League defence, and it's pretty incredible how we've got to that stage, really.
Yeah, it is a little bit. Yeah, Ahmed Odzic drops to the bench in this one. I think it was a fitness thing, right?
He says that, yeah. I mean, a lot of people are, you know, doing the old conspiracy theories.
He did
out,
come on, obviously.
Yeah. And he's been appalling. I mean, it could have been him or Trusty drop, let's be honest. So, and one of them, maybe both of them, probably did deserve dropping, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about not being able to learn much, I suppose. You mentioned Arblaster there. I think... Him and Gribbich are two players I learned a bit, well, a fair bit about in this game. I was really impressed with Arblaster. You know, his first Premier League start, did not look out of place at all. Used the ball really well. He wins the corner that leads to our second goal with a great run and a decent shot at the end of it. He doesn't look like physically outmatched against a pretty mobile Bournemouth midfield, I thought. And that's kind of, I don't know, that feels like a sort of, because I feel like we, United, keep bringing through these quite technically decent footballers, but there's often a worry, like, physically, are they going to be able to play at the elite level, I suppose? And Arblaster's not like a, you know, it's not like Philip Billing or anything like that, you know, going to be bullying people off the ball. But he looked really neat and tidy, used it well. Wins this corner from which Neto in the Bournemouth goal makes a bit of a boob from, and Robinson hooks it in. Pretty clearly over the line, fortunately.
Yeah. I heard Tom Davis were decent first half. I've not obviously seen the performance myself, but...
Mm. Yeah, well, he was decent on the ball. Is he going off for fitness reasons as well? Like, what's...
Wilder said after the game, I don't know if you heard his interview, and he said something like, in hindsight, he probably should have given him, he probably could have done an hour, and he took him off for
Ziyech. How can he only do an hour?
I don't know. I know he's been out injured most of last season and this season, and I can only presume that we're being ultra careful with him.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, he's been in the squad now for, I'm just going to look it up, but he's been on the pitch like the last six games, I think. Let me just bring this up. So we're going back like a...
Start of the last two and being brought off at half-time in both of them.
So since the Villa home game, which was the start of February, so you're looking at it's 5 weeks now where he's been match fit enough to be in the squad and get on the pitch. And they only do 45 minutes, man. I mean, that's... I don't know. It seems really weird that we gave him this 3-year contract, to be honest, when he clearly has fitness issues. It's a shame because I wanted to see more of him, and the subs definitely made us worse in this one, but I think it was, unfortunately, the nature of it is you have to make those subs. You know, McBurnie's just unfit. Brereton's coming back from an injury.
I've heard the subs were awful. I mean, there's rumours this week, I don't know, that Souza wants to leave and stuff, and, you know, whether that... I thought he'd drop Souza. I meant to say this on the last pod, actually. I think they mentioned it on Four Blades as well, where... Because Wilder, I think he said something on the lines of, you know, there's certain players and they've got to track back and they're not going to be playing next week. And he were one of them. I really thought that were aimed at Souza. So I wasn't surprised when he were dropped, and I've got a feeling he won't be here next year himself.
Interesting. I think the whole team was so bad against Arsenal that we kind of didn't really zero in on any individual.
No, and rightly so. They were all probably 1 out of 10, really.
Yeah, but he had a sort of more conspicuously James Harper-esque pointing after someone's just knocked in a goal role in that one. He comes on for Davis at halftime. And I think the big one is McBurnie going off, which...
Yeah.
It's so bizarre, this, but we need him defensively. Like, I know there's like this sort of semi-joke of, like, could he play centre-half, which is just, obviously, is just just a farcical.
Dion Dublin did it. Look at him now, doing Elms Under the Hammer. Could be doing that in 20 years' time. But, it's funny enough, we saw the sub, actually, in the poll, McBurnie's off, and then literally as soon as, like, we saw that he'd been taken off, we conceded, and he said, off a corner, like, why don't you keep him on?
Yeah, dreadful defending by us for both goals, really, and they both sort of come from set-piece crosses into the box. I think this might be the worst set-piece goal we've conceded
this season. It's awful. I mean, I've seen people blame Gribbich for it. I don't know. I don't think... It's just bad. It's bad all around.
Zero blame on Gribbich for this one. It's a free header.
Freda from about 2 yards out off the corner.
It's fizzed into the near post. No goalkeeper on earth is... If a goalkeeper's coming for that, he's doing his job wrong, I think. Yeah, like, he can't be charging out to the near post every time.
McAtee's man, I think it is, anyway.
Yeah. So he's not exactly the most physical specimen either, McAtee. But I think just having somebody... Generally, leaving someone with a free header at your near post is not advisable. And he obviously powers it into the net from close range. And then, late on, it just sort of gets flicked on. Nobody picks up, I think, another of their substitutes. Yeah, isn't it? And he just fires it in the 91st minute.
We nearly lost it, didn't we? Obviously, watching the highlights and very, very, very close to losing it. And to be honest, 91 minutes, when they said 8 minutes, I was just, we're going to lose this, take a draw.
Yeah.
I'd have cashed out if I could have, you know what I mean, if I had the ability to.
So Gribbich, this is like the first time he's had the chance to make some saves, I thought. Yeah. And yeah, he did all right. He had like one in the first half where I think he got bailed out by a foul. Oh no, it went for a goal kick actually, sort of.
Yeah.
It didn't jump very high and it kind of bobbled off the Tavernier, I think it was.
Pete Shilton, Maradona vibes. Credit to Webding who said that. I know he don't like people nicking his.
That's a good shout.
Nicking his line. So, but yeah, he did say that, and I've seen the replay back since, and it is very much like that. It's like, how is he going to buff him there?
Yeah. No stunning saves, but he kept out four or five that you think, like, you know, well done, you've done a good job there. And I'm sure I saw some people like criticising for this, but he swept up really well off a through ball in the first half as well. Came like charging out and did deal with it. I thought it was it was easily his best game.
I feel sorry for him. People have put him in the group of crap signings, and I imagine a lot of that is because all the others are being so poor that you're thinking here's another one. But I don't think we can judge him. And like I said, when we come on to next week's pod or whatever, I'll be, you know, talking about him a bit more because he's one of my things that I want to see. And what I want to see is the fact that just show me that you're as good as Wes, which I don't think we've seen so far. But it doesn't mean he isn't as good as Wes.
Yeah. I thought that was encouraging. You know, it finally gets a chance to make some saves, I suppose. But obviously still concedes two goals. As I said at the top, I guess I'm not fooled by this one. It doesn't feel like it feels like we stole a point, even though we had a 2-0 lead going into the last 15 minutes or so. I think maybe we hold on if McBurnie is fit enough to play longer than an hour and he heads away those corners, but he ain't fit enough to play longer than an hour. He's never fit enough to play longer than an hour, it seems like. And that's just the state of this team this season. It is. The fitness levels are really poor, aren't they? Which is,
I don't know. I've seen this, and I could be wrong with this. And nobody, I think they are poor, definitely. But the fact that we never have the ball, and
that's true.
I think there's only a couple of games this season we've had more of the ball. I want to say Luton at home, there's another one recently that we had more of the ball. I can't remember where it was. Were it West Ham? Might be West Ham. Yeah, anyway, it might be Wolves actually. Yeah, but we're constantly chasing the ball. Mm. You look against Arsenal. I think they had 18% or whatever it was. Might be 19%. They must be more knackered than everyone else because they're chasing around players far better than them. But we did a bit. Maybe not to this degree, but in that season under Wilder, we finished ninth, we hardly had any of the ball. You know, we were never top of the percentages in most games that season. And we looked like the fittest team in the league.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just...
But does it come down to a pre-season again? You know, we've got Hamer, Souza, Berrett and Diaz, obviously. McBurnie didn't get a pre-season. There's 9 or 10 players here who didn't have a pre-season at all, whether it's because they weren't at the club. By all accounts, Souza were at the club for like 2 or 3 weeks before he signed and didn't train. Or he was training on his own in Lamel or whatever. Mm. And then you've got people who are injured in pre-season, like McBurnie and stuff. And is it all because of that? Is it all just coming to a head now?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I have a real hard time waving it away, I suppose. Just at this stage of the season, you know, what are we, 6 months in, 5 months in or something like that? Yeah, McBurnie, as far as I know, hasn't been injured for a while. He's just not playing properly.
I don't think there's another one who can't finish the games. And this is the big thing. I mean, obviously, we're going to have a new team next season, pretty much anyway. Wilder's interesting comments, I thought. I don't know if you've heard it, where he said there's a lot of people at the club who people expect to sign who probably don't want to sign. And you think, ooh, that's an interesting one. So I get the feeling it is going to be a genuine and proper clear out. Maybe, I think we've got I read yesterday, I don't know how true it is, we've got an extension on Bogle. So I imagine the people with extensions, we might just trigger them just because it's the easiest thing to do. I've got a feeling the likes of Baldock, Egan, Basham, I think that might be it for him. Just judging by what he said in the press conference.
I don't want this Baldock and
Egan. I know, I don't want to get too down about it just now, but yeah. But I'm reading into that. I've not heard anything, so.
Fair dues. We scored from a corner prior to Jack Robinson hooking that one in. It was one goal in 91 corners.
Yeah, so Hal tweet this,
Hat tip to the commentators for this one.
What a return that is.
It's pretty bad. Yeah, we've been really poor at that end and really poor at the other end, which is why we're the worst team in the league. So yeah, 2-2 draw, happy enough, on to 14 points. Continue to marvel that Derby only got 11, I suppose.
Weird, isn't it?
And it did feel really nice not being bottom for 24 hours before. I don't know, Wilder fired him up, didn't he, with his post-match comments?
The thing is with this thing with Wilder said, I don't know if anyone's seen it. If you look at the BBC iPlayer, they do Travelling Blades on it, actually, and they go through like why Burnley and Sheffield United so bad. Daniel's story at the end of that is well worth a watch. It's absolutely fantastic. He talks about how people are holding Luton up as this sort of, you know, oh, it shows people can compete. They've won 5 matches all season. Mm. They're on less points now than Southampton were at this time last season, who finished bottom.
Wow.
They are not competing. They're doing better than, just because they're doing better than us and they're not getting absolutely battered. That's not competing. It's competing in each game.
Yeah.
But my own feeling is people are using Luton as like a, brushing it under the carpet, how uncompetitive it is, you know, the Premier League. And I've seen a lot of fans this week, actually. Forest fans, obviously Everton fans have been moaning all season. Even Brentford and Brighton fans talking about how they don't feel like they can really compete, you know, and it's quite dull for them that every week they're going into games and 12 games a season, they've realistically got no chance of winning. I think the fact people are holding Luton up as a, you know, this sort of shining example of what can be achieved when they're third from bottom, it speaks as a, you know, I don't know if they're doing it consciously or, you know, it's just sort of like, forget about that. Yeah, so it's all right, the Premier League. But if this keeps happening, and if the three come, obviously Leicester look like they're going to get points knocked off when they come up, not that really impressed with Leeds and Southampton, really, from what I've seen. They're good in the Championship. I imagine they'd be better than us and Burnley. But if them three come back down, we're going to have a proper serious conversation about what's going on.
Mm. Yeah, it feels like Luton are like the best case scenario promoted team.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're probably going to go down. I mean, look, they've got Forest next week, which should be a great game. They might stay up. I'll be amazed if they stay up the season after.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the best case scenario, and they're probably like 80% to likely to go down, I'd say. I think the bookies' odds probably match up with
and
that.
And it sounds like you're being, and this is what I think, Wilder, it sounds like you're being bitter. It's not. I'd love to be in Luton's position right now compared to ours.
They've done fantastically
well.
Week to week, mate. Give me that enjoyment of feeling like you could get some every week and score goals.
We lost to Arsenal 5-0 at home. They lost 4-3 in the last minute. You know what I mean? Stuff like that. They drew with Liverpool at home and stuff. They've had a great... They've given it a real go. They've given it probably the best go that they could have had. But this holding them up, it's almost, like Darren Shorey said, it's almost patronising to them. Little old Luton here with the 5 wins. It's just like, I do get the feeling, obviously, that change yesterday, which I don't fully understand, with the clubs can now spend 85% of their revenue, whatever. I've seen loads of people complaining about that, saying it's just, I don't know. I think, I really do think the Premier League in the next couple of years is, I know it's as big as it's ever been, but I think there's going to have to be a conversation coming about the competitiveness of it.
Aye. Do I have the heart to correct you that we didn't lose 5-0 to Arsenal? It was 6-0.
Oh, it's 6.
Yeah. Sorry.
I weren't even there. I couldn't even say that I left.
Yeah, exactly. We've got a big old break now. The next game's not till the end of March, is it? Fulham at home.
Oh, mate. It's going to be amazing. It'll be like the summer holidays.
When is that Fulham game? Yeah, 30th of March, yeah.
30th of March, yeah. 2 weeks. The next week's FA Cup games, then it's the international break, and then we're back. And once that game's done, mate, we're into single figures.
Yeah, good point. So some off-field news to fill the airwaves, I suppose. And this is really good news. The Blades announced, I think they secured, the phrasing is slightly weird, secured an agreement to purchase land for a new training centre. So this is up at Dewar, isn't it? It's been a 3-year search by the sounds of it. And it feels like I feel like this has been quite a persistent refrain, particularly from yourself, of like 3 out of 5 years in the Premier League, what have we got to show for it? This actually would be something to show for it. And that is fantastic news.
Long way to go, obviously, to, you know, to getting spades in the ground, as they say. But it is a positive step, you know. And like I say, you know, we spoke about this off air. I think people who haven't been listening to this podcast this year probably think we don't like the Prince at all. But all I'll say is look at the pods that we did after Wilder left, where the Prince were getting absolutely hammered. And we defended him to the point where we were contacted by a certain someone saying thanks to being so even-handed. But I don't support the Prince, and I'm not interested in gaining any respect from that because I support Sheffield United and they're more important than me, if you know what I mean. And I don't think the Prince is the worst owner, and I've said that many times. He's not Chancera. He's not ripping the fans off. The prices at the ground have been fantastic. He could have... Loads of people were saying that he was going to put prices up. He's not an asset stripper, as people say. But I just think we've been left adrift in the past 18 months. And whether that's because the Prince genuinely believed Marouse or Doze were going to get the club. But for me, he's not been engaged enough for the 18 months, and I felt like we've been a little bit like a club without a car without a driver. Mm. Or, you know, I like an analogy. He seems like he's a little bit more engaged at the moment, but we've still not really seen him other than on fan channels, and obviously when we got to the semi final where he appeared on SUTV, and then when we got promoted on Talk Radio, we weren't even present for when Slav went. And I think from that moment when Slav went, he'd lost interest pretty much anyway, and he wanted to sell. You can't let a club run on its own. And I think promotion massively papered over huge cracks at the club and that paper's now been torn off, in the most dramatic style this season, and while we're a national laughingstock. And like I say, I think in the first 2 years he was here as sole owner, I thought he did some really good things. You know, like I said, with the getting the club back together. I know he had to do that due to the court arrangement, but getting the ground back and stuff and gambling, and it backfired. You know, the Bruce, it was a gamble from him, which I don't think McCabe would have made. And the first season probably wouldn't have happened under McCabe. I think the Prince definitely deserves credit for his involvement in that and getting it to that ninth place. But I just feel like since relegation, he's always been bothered about is selling the club, and he's almost let the club just drift and drift and drift. And and I hope this season, if there's any positive out of it, the national embarrassment has been a jolt. I'm like, whoa, hang on, we need to do some stuff here. And all I want to see is a plan. I just want to see a plan in place. And if this is the first step of good news coming down the, we'll applaud it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't need to see the Prince. I just need to see actions. I mean, that's why. Yeah. I think I said that when he started doing like interviews and stuff on Sheffield United Way, I think, wasn't it, the first one, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm just not interested in what he's got to say. Like, just share me with your actions. And I don't feel like there were any actions like up to this point, which is probably a year later or something like that.
Well, I was same as you. Like, I didn't watch the interview he did with Jimmy Ramble, but not because I'd heard the Sheffield United Way interview and he said some stuff on that never came true. And the contract things was absolutely ridiculous, what he said. Yeah. And I was not interested in what he had to say. It's not about him coming out and, give us actual plans, not, he's going to do this in a couple of months. Yeah, we're supposed to get an interview with Betis, I think he said, in January, which has not happened. Give me something and this is something. Whether it happens or not, but this is a plan that's been put in place, and that is all I'm asking for the rest of the season. By all accounts, Wilder's going to meet him next week, and I hope that Wilder. I know he's not in the position of power that he once was, but he doesn't seem like the sort who's just going to let it say, yeah, whatever. He's not a shrinking violet, is he? If he doesn't think he's going to get what he thinks he should get, then he will say so. Hopefully, we see some sort of positivity out of the carnage of this season.
Yeah. But yes, this is great news. I mean, from what we generally hear, Shirecliffe isn't the greatest training ground at the moment. And getting a brand new, presumably, modern facilities will be fantastic. It's the sort of thing it's going to be hard to see like a tangible, we're not going to score like 10% more goals once we start, training at this place. But it's the sort of thing that it just makes the club look better, in terms of retaining players, developing players, attracting players as well. There's no more, hole in the roof at Shirecliffe or whatever with water dripping through. Just really good news coming out. We'll see. Let's see how long it takes to actually open, I suppose.
And if this happens, and even if it's in 3 years' time, and even if we're in League One, at this stage, if we have a Sunderland type season, which I don't think we will, but it could happen. At least when he leaves, we can say, well, we ended up in the same place where he took us over, but with an academy, a category A academy, because that's obviously the long term goal with moving, and a new training facility. It's not what we want, but if we're mid table in the championship with that, at least we can say you know, it wasn't worthless. You know, it wasn't worth those two appalling seasons that we had where everybody hated it. At least there was some sort of advantage gained from being in the league, which I don't feel at the moment that we've got.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Hopefully this is the first step, as I say. The club retains Shirecliff. It will be used solely by the academy once the first team move to Door. The quote from United is, further scope to develop the site towards the long-term end goal of achieving Category 1 status. So that's a bit... not exactly a firm commitment. You know, it's basically saying with the intention of having a good academy. So, I'm not taking that as like read as that's going to, you know, come to fruition in the next couple of years or anything. But it's good to have that aim. You know, there's not too many clubs with a Cat 1 academy. I think it's only about 18 or 20. It's probably the Premier League and then a couple more teams. Yeah. It's like Norwich have got one. Reading have got one at the moment. Swansea as well, I think. So, yeah, it is something that would be a good legacy, I suppose. United's women team conspicuously absent from this announcement. I'll just put that in as a footnote, and there doesn't seem to be any real plan yet as to what it means for the women's team, who currently don't train at Shirecliff. They train off-site, but I don't know. I was hoping we would see some news on that by now, but apparently not. So, but overall, really good news, mate. Nice to have something coming out. Do you place any stock in the timing of this announcement and the media storm, in inverted commas, on Wednesday, was it, last week?
Berger, obviously. I don't know, you know, the report that Eckenbottom wasn't told about Berger. I absolutely loved the denial that it ended up inadvertently confirming the story.
Great.
You know, it was genuinely hilarious, that. I mean, I don't know. Who am I to I weren't there in the situation. But, you know, like, we told him every step. It reminds me, do you know that day-to-day sketch? In 1995, no one died. It's about, like, Monday, we told him. Tuesday, in Wednesday, we didn't tell him. But, yeah, apparently couldn't get hold of him. Well, if Eckenbottom's turning his phone off 3 days before a season and the transfer window's still open, then, you know, I don't think he's doing his job that well.
It's going straight to voicemail. I'm
laughing at some of the quotes where it's just like 10 missed calls from Bettis and 12 from Sneck.
Yeah, sod that. I'm not answering this. I'm having a nice cup of tea in my house. It was pretty baffling. It doesn't look good on United. It was very... I don't know. One of the more bizarre things was that we'd suddenly woken up and briefed the local media to get a story out there, which we never do. I think
that does that in it, yeah.
Yeah, not at all. So I don't know whether we sort of spun up the PR machine in the wake of that to get this announcement out there, because it is a very early stage announcement about the training centre of, like, we have agreed a deal in principle to purchase the land. It's not like, yes, this is the time scale that this will be open, we have planning permission, la la la. But yeah, I don't know, just an odd week, I suppose. Another significant bit of news, Paul Mitchell, the chief scout, head of recruitment, I can't remember his exact role, he is leaving the club as well, with immediate effect, I think, which gives us I hope we're going to get a replacement in very soon, because, you know, I don't want us to be heading into June without a head of recruitment. You know, you want the plans in place well before the transfer window opens. Just a few words on Paul Mitchell, I suppose. He's been here since 2016. And while transfer business has been pretty poor in the last few years, you'd have to say, a lot of players that have not worked out or that we've overpaid for, you've got to look at that. United aren't in this. They're probably not in the Premier League without Mitchell's involvement in those first few years. And incredible value for money on the players that we signed post 2016. So, he deserves a lot of respect. You know, it's easy to sort of go like, God, we've been absolutely awful in the transfer market for the last couple of years. Like, it's about blooming time we're changing, you know, the head of recruitment. But some of his wins were probably some of the best transfers that we've done, you know, in the time that you and I have been supporting us, I'd say.
Yeah, fantastic. Like I said, a lot of quote, I shouldn't agree with all people critics, oh, thank God and all this. And yeah, the recruitment's been absolutely appalling. But we've had little money to spend, and unfortunately the money that we have spent looks like we've wasted it. But I think this is why I had a debate with a couple of people online about, we said last week we'd like a fresh start with Wilder not being here. Because to me, and there's some great opinions back as well, people who want to keep Wilder. I think there's logic in that completely. I can understand why people want him to build a new team after what happened last time. And, and he's been at the club already and stuff. But it does feel like everything's breaking up. You imagine at the end of the season, Basham won't be here, Boldock won't be here, Norwood won't be here, Egan won't be here, Paul Mitchell's left. It does feel like, finally, it's really hard to take because these people have been fantastic for us, and I include Mitchell in that, but we are going to have a new era now. And if these people and the new scout, or new recruitment team, can create the memories that they did in 2016, then Christ, we're in for a right ride.
Yeah, so it's. I'm encouraged by. I mean, it sounds. Sorry, it was a mutual consent. I'm not encouraged by somebody losing their job. Although, yeah, I don't know. I feel like Paul Mitchell's probably going to land on his feet with a nice job somewhere else if that's what he wants, just based on his track record. I feel encouraged by the fact these moves are happening now. I mean, it's a very minor thing, but I think Paul Reeves is leaving as head of commercial at the end of this season as well. This is super tiny, but also I took it as a note of encouragement. We're hiring a set piece analyst. There's that job description is out there at the moment. That is a marginal gains type thing. But the fact that we're actually looking at bringing someone in to do that job is really encouraging to me. That goes against the, asleep at the wheel, treading water kind of feeling of the last couple
and
of
that's
seasons.
How maybe the Prince has thought, there's three scenarios. One is you just genuinely don't care. One is he genuinely thought we were going to sell the club, so we're just I'll let them sort it.
Yeah.
And the other one is he thought, things are going all right, we've been promoted again, and didn't acknowledge the massive iceberg coming his way about, what possibly could happen. And if there's one positive of this season, if we can take any positives out of it, I hope it is that we need to rejig things and we need to become a more modern club, as cliched as that sounds.
Yeah. I guess my concern is who's making these personnel decisions at the moment? Is it the case that, Prince Abdullah is suddenly I think I will start taking an interest in this again. We've publicly hired a third party to try and sell the club, haven't we? Which is,
yeah.
I don't know, seems odd in itself. So, he clearly still wants to leave, as in to sell the club. So is it, and who's going to make the decision over the new hires of head of recruitment? Is that Wilder? In which case, is he here beyond this season? And, even best case scenario, his contract runs only to the end of next season. Is he the right man to make that decision and rebuild that recruitment team? I don't know. Maybe we're just seeing the first kind of, I'm going to use a terrible analogy, I think. The first cards being placed in a house of cards here. Maybe there's more to come in terms of a director of football perhaps being brought in or something like that. Maybe that is in the works. So I'm a little bit something pessimistic, just hesitant, I suppose, sort of isolation, these are good things that really encourage me that the club's starting to get its act together, or starting to take those baby steps. But I guess it would also be good to know who is in charge of the overall plan. And there's only two men. It's the Prince and Bettis. And I don't know if that's a good idea either. It feels like there should be a person just in that rung below them that they just hand
off. Well, hopefully that's where they employ someone. I think everyone would agree with that. It could be just words. It could just be, we've had a really bad season. Let's just put some stuff. Oh, we're buying this training ground. And we've sacked him. He's going. We're getting a new recruit. Everything's changed. Or it could be, I'm going to take this seriously. We can't carry on with these awful signings and the way things have gone in the past two or three years in terms of off the pitch stuff. So it's watch this space, isn't it? Like you've said, you don't want to hear from him really. You want to see actions, and we've got the plans for the actions. Now it's just playing the waiting game for the actions.
Yeah, we've seen more actions in the last week than in the previous 18 months, I'd suggest.
Yeah.
And that does give me hope. I think Wilder also alluded to, watch out for more good news, I think he said, coming in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, he did. Probably a 10-year contract.
Well, it will be, because I think he's, I read in the Star earlier, he's in is in Saudi Arabia for the, like 4 or 5 days. So they're obviously there's going to be a lot of, you know, a lot of intense discussions there. And it's not like a come out to Saudi Arabia because I'm going to sack you kind of meeting, is it? You know, there's no.
You never know.
You never know. Back. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
That's it. I've been made redundant.
Yeah. You never know, but I imagine it is discussing the future of the club. So maybe there will be, more positive changes in the coming weeks. Right, mate. I've run out of time. I wanted to talk about the news of McBurney and Jebison. The reporting is that they are off ski in the summer. Jebison, not a surprise. McBurney, maybe slightly frustrating. We'll put a pin in that. We'll talk about that next week, I guess. Maybe there'll be some more information about that as well at that point. Because I've got a skedaddle. Anything to plug before we finish up?
No, we've got a view from Bournemouth. They were just basically saying we were rubbish, which normally teams do this season. So yeah, on that.
Standard. What have I got? I think it's probably out now. My new BBC Sport thing. It's about the training ground, actually, and just putting a legacy in place and how good that is. So everything I've just said on here basically condensed into 300 words. So new Women of Steel will be out on probably Thursday. I'm doing a double header because the women play tomorrow night at Bramall Lane. 7 o'clock if anyone's fancies watching United Women. They need a win, mate. They really need a win.
Yeah.
They lost to Lewis last week and then Palace this weekend, just gone. Teams at the bottom are starting to pick up points. So they play Watford, who are the new bottom of the table team, at Bramall Lane on Wednesday night. And a win pretty much secures their championship status for another season. But could get a little hairy if they lose that. So I'm really hoping.
Well, the way this season's gone, I'm fully expecting in like a month's time saying, who would have thought I got relegated with the women as well?
How did that happen? The old double relegation. So fingers crossed that doesn't happen. But next Women of Steel, which is womenofsteel.substack.com, should be out on Thursday, I think. Right, mate, I'm going to wrap up there. Thanks very much for your time. We will be back next week. We have, you know, content planned, even if United haven't got any games for a couple of weeks. And I'm looking forward to that. So thanks to everyone for listening. Thanks to you for your time, mate. And I'll catch up with you soon.
Thanks a lot, mate. Cheers.